Welcome to another episode of the Girl Dad Show. I have a special guest, Eric, just like previously, but we ended up just talking some more, and the conversation ended up being so good that we're recording a second one as we go. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Kick me off with the topic, because this is a good one.
All right, so this is just a weird one that I'm encountering that I'm just super fascinated with right now. Right. And I don't have an answer. It's just like a new thing that I discovered, which is custom AI-created resumes.
Custom AI-created resumes.
Yeah.
Like gamified towards the job description kind of thing? Like, wow, that's interesting. That's really interesting.
So I have 4 job posts out right now on Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them got something like 230 resumes in the first, like, 4 days for a software engineer. And not deliberately, but just sort of accidentally, I put something in the resume that didn't really make sense. Or it was kind of, like, redundant. So I wrote, as requirements, Django, which is a Python-based web framework, and then Python, and then Vue.js, which is a front-end framework.
Mm-hmm.
So all these resumes come in, whatever, and a bunch of them say Python, Django, Vue.js. Mm-hmm. And that's just like it's not wrong, but it's just, if you were an actual engineer, you probably don't write that in that sequence in that way. And there are other requirements, like, you know, we're talking about, I'm like, hey, this is what the job does, we do, you know, AI-driven QA and QC pipelines. We are working with employment verifications. And I am seeing impeccable resumes. They literally check every box. And in some of them, they're bolded, and some of them are not. They're different styles. And I'm first of all, shocked. And I'm like, I hope these are real. But the short answer is, I'm 100% confident that people are using at scale some sort of automated software where, like, it basically takes a job description, generates the perfect resume, and spits it back. And I had previously seen, like, plugins where it'll take your resume, it'll, like, improve it or maybe move the points around.
Right.
But these are just straight up fabricating experience that didn't exist.
Wow. So it's just too perfect to be true. It's like literally like your experience fits the thing exactly.
That's the first layer.
Oh, okay.
Like, is this surprising to you? Like, you kind of understand, like, yeah, okay, I could see how that happened.
Yeah, like, once you said it, I had to think about it, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, I could see someone using AI to do that. That makes sense. Yeah.
Well, I've searched for tools, right? I just discovered this week, and I'm still, like, kind of, like, hunting around it. And somebody probably already knows the answer to this, so if somebody knows this, like, message Young, and Young will text me.
Exactly.
And they'll get to know the answer to it. But, you know, I've looked for software that does this, and all the software that I found, they're like plugins or whatever, where for the most part, there's like single generation, but there is also like take the resume and cater it to a job post.
Right.
I haven't seen any that will completely fabricate non-existing experience and make up related lines to the interview. But that was really interesting to me. So I didn't know this. I start setting up interviews, like, you know, they also pass like the chat, initial questionnaire, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And my first interview is with Blake Robinson from Bastrop. I'm like, oh, great, Bastrop, right?
Yeah.
It's even got a 512 phone number on the resume and all that.
Yeah.
Show up. It's a 8:30 a.m. first round interview.
Yeah.
You know, we have a multi-round interview process where the first one's kind of like a vibe check, all that. You know, just make sure our requirements are a fit. Blake Robinson shows up. He is a Indian guy with a very heavy Indian accent.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, Blake. you know, in Zoom, like, I don't have this right now, but you can like blur out your background. His background's blurred. But it's very clear to me that behind him is a window.
Mm.
And the window is half pulled up, and it's nighttime in Bastrop, Texas, at 8:30 a.m. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But anyways, super...
Did you call him out on it?
I didn't call him out because I was, you know, to be honest, like, I was intrigued.
Yeah, intrigued.
It was a puzzle to unwind.
Yeah.
But I start asking him questions, like, about his experience, all that kind of stuff. And it becomes clear to me that he's actually not that technical. And then he's got, like, these weird glitches where he's like, oh, he has to pause. He'll, like, you know, mute the microphone.
Yeah.
And then... at some point, we
look
get
up
to
the answers.
More technical questions, and then he's like kind of pausing and waiting. And so my first thought was that he had an AI teleprompter.
Totally. Totally.
He was listening and responding. And so I started chasing this thread. The next interview I had with James from Brooklyn, who had a very similar profile. But I've seen definitely, like, you know, Indian, Pakistani. I've seen a guy from Vietnam. a guy from Korea. Today, actually, I think I had James Campos, who was a very heavy Korean accent. This guy was really interesting because I've been thinking as a teleprompter. I have offered twice now to people. I'm like, hey, you're not going to get this job, but I will pay you money if you'll tell me about the AI tool stack you're using.
Yeah.
I've been declined both times, but I'm sure I'm going to get to the bottom of this. I'm very curious. But this guy today, he was not looking at his camera. He was not looking at a screen. He was whatever. But he had the same kind of headphones you have. I think he might have an AI voice assistant in his ear telling him what to say.
Well, I mean, Apple's coming out with their voice translation too. So I can imagine that like its technology is like super fast now. Yeah, it's like processing at the speed of like actual conversation and telling him the right answer.
It's like he had good stories to tell about.
Wow. So it wasn't even just the right answer. You had stories, huh?
Well, like, you know, I was asking him kind of like job specifics that would be really, really hard to, you know, if you were an engineer who's written any kind of code, you could kind of like fake your way around technical questions. But these were around specific processes and about the industry. But it was like, it was enough that I think an AI would give good answers. Like, I think ChatGPT would have given good answers about the employment verification industry in general, but not really understand the use cases and how to put them together. So he was putting together snippets that didn't really make sense together. Like he would describe some of the challenges with like why employment verification is important and then explain the challenges with employment verification data at scale. But those things don't really connect in the way HR departments care about it. So like you don't have to verify millions of employment records in order to make a decisioning process for a candidate, for example.
Yeah.
And so I was like, hey, explain to me how those things are connected. And he just couldn't. And then, you know, there were moments he would pause. And then at some point, like, a face glitched in and glitched out, like on the virtual background. But
wait, you think it was a visual AI too? You think it was a visual AI too, or just?
No. I think he's in an office or something like that, where he's probably like on a, you know, in like a dev farm.
But what's the game of that? Like, why would they have a pseudonym, like an American pseudonym? Why wouldn't they just say they're a dev farm?
That's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that.
What's the benefit here? You know, what's the play?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, yeah, I don't have an answer to that. But overall, like, my thought was, like, I've been very impressed with the AI tools. It's clear to me that, and like I said, I have 4 job posts out there. Only one of them is getting these kinds of applications.
Is it a software engineer one?
It's the remote software engineer.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because I feel like maybe it's like more technical, so they feel like they can get past all the technical testing, and I don't know.
But I mean, the tooling is pretty good. I thought it was like teleprompters. I think it might be voice AI. They're clearly like taking the job post as input and generating a custom resume for it. And then when they actually get to the interview, the screen actor has the context of the resume fed to them, so they can actually talk through the resume, through the points.
Wow.
It's like more sophisticated than I would expect.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's awesome.
I'm very curious. It's a little puzzle that I'm interested in. It's like a consequence of AI that I'm not excited about.
No, because then you're going to have to like basically reuse AI to read through the resumes to see which ones used AI or not, right? Like it's going to be like this counteraction of like checks and balances that are just constantly permutating on itself. It's going to be super wonky. Can I tell you something that you may judge me on?
Please.
I haven't used a resume, or obviously I haven't in like a decade or so, because I haven't, you know, really been looking for a job like that. But I haven't asked for a resume, I don't know, in like 10 years. I mean, I'm constantly hiring people and I just don't. I just like ask for a LinkedIn profile and I try to assign mutual contacts and validate through references. But I mean, people send me their resume and I'm recruiting for a bunch of people and I don't look at the resume, even if they email it to me.
You just go out to your personal network though?
I do go out to my personal network. I try to find a LinkedIn because LinkedIn is like a really great place because you can find social capital, right? So who are your mutual contacts? And if you don't, then who knows, right? Like who knows someone that knows someone that you can ask, you know, for like, and like you'll random, I mean, you're not on social, so it's harder for you to see it, but like, yeah, you'll randomly get messages from me on LinkedIn saying, how well do you know this person? You know, like, and that's usually me just double checking someone's validity. And so even pre-AI,
like a content writer or whatever, you just go on LinkedIn and search the word content writer, and then you try to find other people and Do you even care if they're employed or not, or do you just...
No, I mean, it's usually my final check, right? But I rarely look at a resume, which is really bad. I mean, I should.
How do you even source the candidate in the first place?
So we'll post a job on LinkedIn, and then they'll apply on LinkedIn. And then then immediately I can just validate, like, some sort of social sphere, or if they're legitimate. Because you can tell, like, the fake LinkedIn profiles very quickly. It's just super obvious, you know? And then the ones that are really well done that are, like, lying about, like, working at large companies now. You'll know people that work at those companies, you know? So you literally can just go like, hey, this person's connected with you. Is this legitimate? And they go, yeah, it is. And it's like, or it's not. And then you're like, oh, wow, that's a really good fake. And then you just kind of stop, right? So yeah. I haven't, ever since I gotten really into LinkedIn, I haven't used resumes. Because there's like, it's like a resume plus social proof.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird, right?
Yeah, I haven't really spent a lot of time on LinkedIn jobs. This was all on Indeed. So I wonder if it's like, platform specific.
I've totally
been job on Upwork, and I have started looking on LinkedIn, but in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for employees of competitors and just cold outreaching to them.
No, that's smart. Yeah. I guess it depends. I guess I'm lying to you, because I do use Indeed for pool cleaning and stuff like that. Like, we do post there for my brick and mortar retail job companies that I have, but
yeah.
But for like a white collar job, I just use LinkedIn. Yeah.
That makes sense.
But it is interesting how AI is going like this, because like one of the problems that I have right now is that we're using a lot of AI. Oh gosh, this is going to be bad if people hate me for this, but a lot of my content is now being generated by a handful of young ladies that have built a thread with GPT to constantly retrain with my tone of voice. Right. So we have a year's worth of content. Yeah. And so like they'll keep like saying, Young, edit it this way. And so in the first 6 months, it was a lot of work. And now it's very little work. Here, pull the insight, the business insights, the opinions that he has on these situations, copy his tone of voice. Here's what he actually said. Here's what you gave him. Here's what he actually said. And then it just keeps getting smarter and smarter. So now they're like writing like me, and they're actually coming up with their own insights and opinions on weird situations that I would never, you know, like just like, so my content is being more and more fed to me now, which is amazing, because I just have to read it and just kind of retrain the GPT. But continuously, this is a major problem. I've been like coaching my team about this a lot, is like the double dashes. I'm like, guys, like, because AI has this thing where like it'll write beautifully like you, but it'll add these dash dash, like two dashes, and it's super annoying, because I'm like, guys, it's like so obvious it's AI, because I would never write a double dash, but AI is like famous for writing double dashes.
Oh, I don't know anything about this. Tell me more. Is this like a commonly known thing? Like AI uses double dashes?
I don't know if it's commonly known. I know that I don't use double dashes in my content, and I know that there's a lot of double dashes on LinkedIn. A lot of double dashes. So I'm kind of like, who uses double dashes? And then now all of a sudden, because of ChatGPT, everyone uses double dashes. Because it's all over LinkedIn. If you spent an hour on LinkedIn, just went down the feed for like 100 posts, I guarantee you 50% of them have double dashes.
Yeah, I don't use LinkedIn at all.
It's okay. It's just one of those weird things that ChatGPT does, where it like fills in the copy and puts in these double dashes. And I'm like, worst case scenario, I would use a single dash. I would never use double dash. And maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm the only one who cares. But I also don't want to.
So why doesn't ChatGPT like get smart and like, because like presumably they're feeding back this feedback saying,
yeah,
Young never uses double dashes.
Yeah.
Still just keeps doing it.
No, it does. But I mean, but you have to The other problem with labor is that then you have to retrain. You can't carry someone's thread over to somebody else yet. So then you have to output when someone rotates, like the staff rotates, then you have to have that person output a prompt that says, hey, if someone else was to take this over and recreate everything that you've learned about me, write a massive prompt that this person can copy and paste, and then it transfers over. But there's always a loss.
Can we talk more about how are you using AI in business, like in maybe all of your businesses?
Sure. In thesis, we use it for content. And I mean, my entire top of funnel is predicated on my LinkedIn content, like posting twice a day. And now we're on Instagram and TikTok, and that copy is being used by AI, and it references my book draft and the reaffirming kind of retraining of the content that I've approved in my tone of voice, right? So it's constantly getting that way, and then we transfer it between people that work on it. And then I also use it for our newsletter and our thesis page LinkedIn, and then I also use it for we will start using it for blogs and SEO generating content that we won't necessarily publish, but we'll put on the website, right? And then as it relates to AI, we will be launching some sort of like chatbot, AI chatbot on Thesis that will reference obviously our opinions and mindsets on business and finance. And then we'll let it take messages, but not actually like coach or do deals, but like it'll actually like just be a really sophisticated, you know, secretary essentially. And then at Blue Ocean, we're building it as we speak, but we're building an AI searchable website, a website that not only is SEO rich, but also it's more likely to be searched by AI LLMs. And then we'll add a voice agent for the evenings and weekends. But this one will just be very simple, like just take messages. We don't want them to like quote things or do scheduling or anything. We just want them to just take a message.
Okay. And, are you nervous about it quoting things or taking or doing bookings?
Yeah, I don't think it's smooth yet. And I will tell you that like for the pool cleaning company, there's a slight negative connotation to using things like that. Especially in my town anyways, you know, we're a small country town, you know, it's not like a big deal, but there's definitely like, it's not neutral. It's a little bit more of a disdain towards like these robotic voices and, you know, like we can train a voice agent to have like a Southern twang, but it might even be sound more forced, right? It's like, it might even be worse to have that Southern accent. I don't know, man. It's just like, it's just tricky, man. It's for me, it's still obvious that it's a robot.
Yeah. I definitely think it's obvious that it's a robot. We do use voice AIs at work right now.
Mm. How's that going for you?
We use it in like really specific use cases. So I've kind of like, I think AI is a tool, and like all tools, it belongs to certain places and not in others. We use voice AI for inbound phone calls, but we don't use it for outbound phone calls, for example. But we probably answer, I don't know, like 100 phone calls a day. Like, I don't know.
Wow. That's good volume. Jeez Louise, you're getting a lot of calls.
But it's great. But we don't pretend to be a human. Like, it says, hey, I'm a voice AI. I can try to handle this for you, but if you don't want to, you know, we can schedule a callback or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to do too for Blue Ocean, actually. It's just going to say, like, literally announce that it is an AI and just not even try to be coy about it, right? Just literally admit it and then just leave them. All we're doing is leaving messages anyways. I just don't want it to, like, go to voicemail and then of us have to like track it and do all these things where if like half the questions are just things we can answer, right? Like, what are your hours? Like, when's my cleaning? Like, you know, what happened with this? Or, you know, it's just like stuff that we can already just answer. Like they can have access to our internal portal and be like, oh, I know this is your Airbnb. We cleaned it on Thursday. Looks like the tech forgot to send you a picture. Let me send it to you, right? Like there's like things that we could solve for that are just like minuscule over the weekend, you know?
So what I'm hearing is where you currently use it as content of various forms, like, you know, and you're expanding some of the content applications, but the one that you're getting into next is inbound voice AI. What else are you seeing or thinking that you want to use AI for? Like where are you seeing in your portfolio companies or the business you advise that they're trying to apply AI?
Well, I'm currently the fractional CFO for an AI company, multiple actually. So they're building these agents, right? So there's a lot of agents that are being built, and I get to see the inside of it. But the thing that I'm most interested about AI is not actually what everyone's doing, which is like kind of client-facing stuff. Like everyone's automating the sales, marketing, and customer service stuff, and I don't really think that that's actually what's going to get market entry. Personally, I think it's back office. It's not as sexy, but I truly believe like bookkeeping should be AI. I know that feels really bad to say out loud, but like it's kind of like every company's nuance on bookkeeping. The reason why I outsource it is because it's not worth my time. And I think that like if you can build a good chart of accounts and then say, hey, over the next 6 months, let's talk about the things that are deviations and then just train the model to find out what are deviations. And then over time that, you know, that 30% that are deviations will become 10%. And then, so now you're doing books on once a month through AI and just referencing less than 20 ledger items. Like it becomes so crazy to pay someone to do that. I mean, if you spent like 3 to 6 months, like doing what I did with my content, you could literally train this to do your books over the course of 6 months. And I think if you can replicate that and do that over the course of all these businesses, you can have a bookkeeping business that could do this for, because bookkeeping is getting more and more expensive. I mean, bookkeeping is now like even for small business, like $300 to $1,000 because labor is so hard. especially if you build a tool for this, right? Like if we build a tool for this, like it could be pennies on the dollar because like a lot of this stuff is not like most business owners don't change their chart of accounts. They have the same business every single month, and variations are like, oh, I put my phone bill on my business instead of my home. Oh, okay, cool. So it's like, you want to do that as an owner's payment, or do you want to do that as a business expense? Like, that's literally it. Then once you make that decision, then the next month you don't have to talk about it anymore. Like, do you get what I'm saying? Like, it's all trainable stuff. And most of these people do less than like 200 transactions a month. So it's kind of like very easy to over time train it.
Why does this require AI, right? So like, let's say it's like, you know, categorizing this one particular payment in a certain bucket. This is something that QuickBooks has had for a long time, like auto-recommending stuff. But especially if it's the same vendor, the same amount, it seems like even pre-AI, that should have already been solved. Like, what is changing about this with AI?
Well, it's the variations, right? I think that over time, if you have like variations of the QuickBooks recommended, it'll start to falter if it doesn't know the changes. So, but eventually, if you do this enough times with the AI agent, it should learn when things change, this is what you do. So when it has six changes to reference, it can now suggest this change. And then over time, those recommendations become the reconciliation, so you never have to do it again, right? Like, it already knows that, like, hey, you do this. Like, you just run your life through your business to mitigate your tax liability. Okay, great. It'll start learning that. And that's the thesis and hope versus, like, QuickBooks auto-recommend and you know, reconciliation rules are just more binary.
Okay. I think I get it. I think, like, AI can be a little bit fuzzier with the rules.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that makes sense. What else? Like what do you think is... You know, because like if you spend a lot of effort and time to invest in AI and then, you know, you ultimately improve net income by 2%, it's like, was it worth it? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Big moves for like any of your portfolio companies.
That's so funny. I don't want to say this on air. I think that modeling is going to be done by AI as well.
Modeling?
Modeling and forecasting will be done by AI very soon here.
Oh, okay. So more.
And, yeah, and it'll completely fundamentally change how we operate for at least a year or two while the market catches up to how well you can tune some of these LLMs to do modeling. The technology is already like there where you can have it help you build assumptions and build the databases to pull from and at what points do you ratchet what, and like, pretty complicated variability.
Is the idea that like an AI is going to like spit out a spreadsheet, or is it that it's going to be an interface where I can talk to it and be like, oh, these are assumptions, whatever, and it'll like have a conversation with me, and like that, like that's what'll happen to sort of like replace, it sounds like you think it's going to totally replace the FP&A function.
I think it already is happening. Yeah. So the first part's something that I want to work on and I'm already testing and playing around with, and I think the second part, there's already companies that are like Runway Financials doing that, you know. Like they're doing a lot of really completely intuitive kind of more user experience things to build out forecasts. They even launched in this thing called ambient listening where they have like the people that join other people's meetings and it'll like grab data from those meetings and say, hey, we heard that your CAC went up. Like, do you want me to add it to the model? You're like, what? And like they just like, 'cause they know everything that's happening in the company, you know? And like, so a lot of cool things like that are happening already. Like, there's a lot of modeling companies that are coming out like Forecaster and Runway Financial and all these guys. But long story short, I've been playing around some of these LLMs and they're already building pretty good models. And that's really fascinating. And then to your point, I love that you went right to the jugular, but the next obvious evolution would be that why do you even need to even build a model, just have these conversations with this AI bot that literally ingests the data and then can spit out these answers. Because the model is supposed to what? Answer questions. So you have, as long as you can frame the right question, you need to answer the question what the variability is, right? And so that's really what a model does for you. Until you turn it into a budget or something like that, then it changes a little bit. But fundamentally, that's what it is, right? What is this? How much do I have to spend to get to this result based on what you know about with the company? That's really what a model is. And so if you can get an AI to not even have to go through the modeling exercise and just answer the question, I mean, that's pretty fundamental change in the operational flow. And I think there's like a year or two where you can charge for it while doing less work and you can make a lot of money. And then I think eventually it'll become mainstream.
Okay. I have
different thesis. Are we going to bet dinner on this too? Yeah. I already bought you a steak dinner because I lost the last bet. I got to be more careful.
I think you are an optimist and excited for change.
Yeah.
And therefore your optimism impacts how fast you think the change will come.
Yeah.
I feel like the same level of optimism about the technology, but I feel that there's an inertia with how businesses operate that just take a long time to change.
Yeah.
So it'll be slow. This is kind of my personal opinion. I think we're more than 2 years out. So the good news for you, Young, is that you have 10 years to take money.
That's so funny. Yeah, I definitely am very optimistic, and you should just let me be because I'll keep buying you steak dinners after all these bets, right? Just stack up a steak dinner every year.
You said something really interesting here, though, is like this idea that it listens in and it says, hey, by the way, CAC's gone up. I think there's an interesting application here that I haven't really heard people talk about, or, you know, I literally have just come up with this idea since you said it. But like, if you can have an AI listen into all of your company meetings.
Doesn't work.
It doesn't work?
Well, I have a client that does that. And I mean, I'm not vocal about it, but, you know, I'll get these summaries of the conversations, and it stitches together the conversations of all the things.
Yeah, like read.ai or whatever. Yeah.
The reason why it doesn't work is that 15% of the time, there's like a context around what's stated, and they're all equally stated. So they're just like, here's the summary of what was the points, da da da. But then like you go back, and because I don't read the summaries. I'm just like, I'm too old school, and I don't really care for these bots that are in my meetings. But once in a while, I'll read the summaries, and I'm like, yeah, those are all accurate. But like that matters a lot less than this. Even in the meeting, that was matter. You know what I mean? But they're pointed out exactly the same. I mean, there's no like subtext to the intonation that was used, or the voice, like the timbre of the voice, of like almost the sarcasm around it, right? Like it doesn't pick those things up. It just says that is fact, and this is what it is. And then that basically trains the next thing that learns from this. You take the summary of this meeting, and then you come up with the strategic plan. It's like, dude, it's all based on inaccurate qualitative data, because I was rolling my eyes when I said that. I didn't actually mean it. You know what I mean? Like, and now the thing thinks that like that's a strategic goal.
So, well, first of all, AIs can detect that. And
yeah,
also,
that's true. Yeah.
Right. So it's probably, you know, these transcription tools have been around for a long time, right? So if we're saying that we can't get a better tool out of it, that's probably wrong. You know, there is going to be a version that's going to be better than just transcription and summarization.
Totally. And I do know, I have seen some of these tools actually assess emotions, and then the video ones actually assess micro expressions. So I have seen these tools come out. It's pretty weird. Yeah. But I will say that it's still not, I don't think it's there yet.
What I'm getting at though, isn't that you're right. I don't think these tools do anything interesting. It's like summarization is great, right? I think what is interesting is that there's always somebody making decisions for the company with incomplete context, right? So instead of thinking about this as like read AI or whatever it's called, like delivers the notes for all these things, which will never be read. These listeners should be observers in meetings and create a single centralized brain. And that single centralized brain with the quality of the inputs, I think what's useful there is then any person who's making decisions at the company level should be able to have access to that and be able to pull up the individual notes, right? Mm. There's something interesting there, because for me, like, I know that people are making, you know, having conversations about something further away in the business. But then to be able to query like sort of the central brain of everybody through all the conversations. And for example, if that was like a custom GPT, they could be like, hey, is anything changing here or whatever? Or here's my plan. Like, is there anything I don't know about in the company that's happening? Mm. That would be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Because right now that idea of a single centralized source of all the information that's currently happening in the business just doesn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sometime in the future it should be smart enough and good enough, you know, but it's also like, I just don't trust it. I mean, like I said, we have a company that I work at that does this. They literally record every single call in the companies, and then they have their own custom SLM on top of their database, and you can ask it questions. But like, I'll ask it questions, and it taps into all the recordings, taps into our Google Drive, taps into our Dropbox, taps into like our Xero. It's connected to everything in the company.
Oh, I love that.
And so you can literally.
Themselves as custom, or did they?
They built it custom, yeah, for their internal operations. But I don't use it right now, because like I still have to go double check it. So then it'll tell me something, and then I have to go validate it, right? Because a lot of the questions I'm asking are very financially related, and so it's just like. Then I'm testing it anyways, and it takes me longer to like validate it than it would have been for me to just go get it. So right now the ease of use isn't there yet, because I'm not certain about the quality of work. But it'll eventually get there. It'll eventually get there. Can you imagine our kids growing up in a world like this?
They're going to. They're going to live in a world with no bookkeepers, apparently.
No modeling career. No FP&A career, yeah. So
what else are you saying? Like, I agree that the back office function is kind of where the interesting thing is going to happen. I think that like content generation, it is what it is. I think like creating drafts is kind of interesting. I think summarization is kind of an interesting thing. When I get like a 60-page like legal document, you know, I want to run it through a machine to tell me like what the high points are. And I think that function is going to get better. But those are kind of like the boring, obvious cases.
Totally. I mean, I just got a new lease on a car and I ran my lease negotiation through it and it was freaking phenomenal, right? I'm like, you know, like you have to be like the world's greatest, like, you know, lease negotiator and like help me understand what I should be looking for. And like, it was so freaking fun, dude. It was like amazing. But these are like menial things that are super like manual in a lot of ways, right? Because I'm doing them like one at a time. But yeah, I'm not really sure, man. I don't dwell on this too much other than the fact that I think that what I do think about a lot is, as this data becomes more commoditized and we have more listening devices collecting all the data collection is getting higher quality, the context is being absorbed, everything's going to get smarter and smarter, if not smarter and smarter, but at least more and more robust, more and more comprehensive, right? I just feel like what I do know, and I'm not necessarily sure what's going to go first or what's going to be the right bet to make on, but I do know is that I think us humans will start to really lean on trust and brand and relationships. And I think that we will really lean on, it'll revert back to creativity and arts and things that are like very bespoke and unique. Because I do know that like even in the entertainment side, there's like movies that they're writing that are going to change based on your experience that you're looking for, right? So your experience ingesting media and entertainment is going to be custom to you. And that's really fascinating. But I think that like because it's going to be like that, I think there's going to be another movement for the arts. And I think there's going to be another movement for creativity. And then I definitely think that who you buy stuff from is going to be more powerful, which is, I'm making a big bet on this, just so you know. So I say this with a lot of bias, but it's why I've been building my personal brand. Like people, I don't really ingest that much content, but I post a lot because I'm trying to put myself out there to be branded as something that, so people recognize me before the proliferation happens. I don't need a million followers, but I would love like 10,000 that know me for something, right? Because then if they ever come across something that they need or want that I do, their immediate thought is, oh, I should tell Young about it, or I should go ask Young if he can help me. That's really all I'm looking for, is because like I think in the future there's going to be so many options that the only thing people are going to trust are the people that they remember as people that are associated with that thing. And I'm trying to sear that into at least 10,000 people's brains before the proliferation happens.
That's so interesting. Well, I mean, this is not a future that I'm worried about.
Okay, got it. So you're not worried about this future at all? Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily wrong. I like this idea of like going back to the arts or something like that. It feels like it's got sort of like echoes of, you know, when people would talk about like UBI, you know, make it so people didn't have to, you know, toil for work, but instead they could be freed up to do the things that were their higher purpose. And I don't know what the difference is, right? Like, in a way, you might think that if AI really is going to create a lot of productivity for the economy at large, then that's essentially like a synthetic UBI.
Hmm.
Right? Like,
oh, you know, that's interesting.
People don't have to do the things that they had to do that like were, you know, what they had to do to put food on the table.
Not initially. I see what you mean. Not initially, because there would be a lack of money initially. But over time, the people would then be able to do their stuff outside of it or around it or on top of it. Then that would actually synthetically become the new UBI.
Yeah. I don't know. Or something like that. Right? And I'm like, I don't know. It feels to me like AI is extremely useful and valuable, like computing was and like the internet was for productivity. And it certainly has echoes of something totally different, but I feel like we're going to be really, really good at just finding ways to fill it all in. And like this renaissance where, you know, everybody's, you know, playing the harp and painting, like it may never actually arrive.
Yeah, totally. I love that you disagree. And I think that that's awesome. I mean, I just feel like there's already so much content coming out. Like it's insane. And even me just being on LinkedIn now for a year and a half, that's right. I've already seen just like the sheer volume of people now posting. It's just like, it's gone like tenfold since I've started doing it.
And it's making it harder to compete, right? Like there's this one guy who did it and published a book, and I feel like now 40,000 people are copying his playbook Justin something. I don't know.
Justin Welsh?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he's cool. Yeah, I like him a lot. Yeah.
But you know, if he did it at a time when nobody else was doing it, and then everybody read his playbook because he sold it for $79.99, and now 1,000 people are doing it, and they're all being told, not just once a day, but at least twice a day. Doesn't it feel like?
Totally. It's already harder to compete. Like, I'm telling you, like, it's already like 10 times, in my anecdotal perspective, there's already 10 times more people doing this, and it's already being more competitive, right? So it's harder to compete against it, which makes me think that it's going to keep going like that, because I look at it going, man, it's getting cheaper and easier for me to post more and more because of AI. Where I used to post once a day, now I can post twice a day because it's just cheaper. And so it's like, why not? It's like one more time. What do I care? The LinkedIn algorithm is only going to show it to people that engage anyway. So it doesn't hurt me. It doesn't hurt my brand. You're not going to see it unless like people, there's like a whole thing like where there just has to be like 100 people that actually engage with it in the first whatever. Like, so like, it doesn't really hurt me. Does it make sense? It doesn't cost me anything monetarily or time. It's just like another thing. And so now I'm also adding to that you know, cluster of stuff. And so inevitably, I do think it's going to make it more competitive. And it kind of goes back to what I'm saying. I think the only thing that matters is going to be people's relationship with their brand within the remembrance of you. If they like you, they trust you, and they feel like they know you, then they're more likely to buy from you. It's kind of like my thesis.
How does somebody outcompete? This, like, is twice a day enough? Like, do you have to do 10 times a day? Does your content have to be 10 times better? Like, what's that?
I think we're moving into a world where the content has to be better. And it needs to be, I personally think it just needs to be approachable. Just be yourself and try not to manufacture it. Because, like, we've done this thing now over the last 2 months where I stopped posting as much from ChatGPT, like having it come up with insights. And I'm actually recording videos. So you'll see in my, you're not on my social, you're not seeing it, but over the last almost 3 months, it's been a lot more videos of me literally talking. And now we're starting to see the engagement come back. But I'm building a relationship with people, right? And they know it's authentically me because we're not using, it's obvious we're not using AI to make my video content, right? It's literally me talking to them. not yet anyways. So that's been, I think that's been helpful. But for me, like I said, like, it's like that thing, like, where, remember, I don't know who said it, but remember, they're like, you don't need 1 million followers, you need 1,000 that will buy from you, or something like that. I can't remember who said that, but
I think it's like Seth Godin, like 1,000 true fans, or maybe is it even only 100 true fans?
Yeah, Seth Godin, that's right. Yeah, I think it's 1,000 true fans. Yeah. I think that right now it's like 10,000 is like the kind of the number you want, but of like really good fans. Yeah, people that actually feel like, you know, they believe you, they understand you, they resonate with you. I think that's really what you need. And I don't think you need it, to be honest with you.
If you've got 20 businesses that are ripping $1 million each of cash flow for you, then like, who cares if nobody knows your name?
Oh, they're not ripping 1 million in cash flow for me. Jeez, that would be amazing. New goal set. Yeah, that's the new goal now. I got to make 1 million each. Yeah, I just want them to have $1 million in annual revenue each, because I feel like their chances of failing at $1 million in revenue significantly drops. I think you have a 90% of failing a business until you get to $1 million. Once you get to $1 million in revenue, if you even have like 12% margins, you're still talking about $120,000 in free cash flow. If I can make $20,000 of that, I'm happy to give it to the GM. You can have the other 100. Like, go for it. You can make $300,000 or $400,000 a year. Great. You can pay yourself 150, get 100 in bonuses and 250,000. Great. Awesome. Just give me 20,000 of it. Right. I'm good with that. That's my goal. Is just the whole reason for
my high level question is like, yeah, what's building the brand for? Because like, you're building the businesses. The businesses will make you money. You don't. It's like, it's not for an economic output.
Well, I think it's because I think that's where the future is going to go. I think the future is going to go where like nobody knows who to trust anymore, because you're getting bombarded with all these outbound agents and voice agents and service agents. And so you're going to go try to find the person that you resonate with to tell you which ones to use and which ones not to use. Like, I'm already seeing it right now. I mean, for lack of better words, like, I'm in a very small micro ecosystem, a micro influencer, right? Like, where people will ask me, hey, what vendor should I use? Or what partner should I use? And I'm able to direct a lot of business to where I think that they should go, because they provide quality work, right? Like, I mean, okay, this is going to be so douchey, but not douchey at all. It's kind of exciting. I got offered to do a sponsored post. And it was not a lot of money. It was like $200, but like someone's going to pay me $200 to do the post about them on LinkedIn. And I was like, oh man, I made it. I'm an influencer now because like I got offered a sponsored post. Not a lot, but the money was so little that it wasn't worth it for me to do the diligence on it to make sure it was a good product. I'm like, I'm not going to spend an hour making sure this is a good, like it's not worth my time. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not worth it. And then if it's not a good product, then I just like, it's costing me 2 hours because then I have to find out the why it's not a good product, right? So now I just spent, so now you're going to pay me $200 for 2 hours, possibly four. It's just not worth it. And so I didn't end up doing it. But the point I'm trying to make is that you will hold a lot of sway in where people will spend their money because they trust you. And there's so much bombardment right now. Everyone's running VSLs. Everyone's running ads and campaigns, outbounds, robot calls. I don't know how many robot calls you're getting, but I get nonstop robot calls. Like, oh yeah, dude, it's so, well, I also own a lot of small businesses. I mean, MCA lenders, revenue-based lenders, I mean, mezzanine lenders, I mean, nonstop, at least 20 a day. And they call me 3 times back to back because they know the Apple Do Not Disturb overcomes it once you call 3 times back to back. It's so annoying, dude. It's so frustrating. Yeah, and so like I'm constantly blocking numbers and I'm like nonstop, but like because I own so many, my name is like out there. And so I'm just like a ripe target, you know what I mean? And they're just like hitting me up like 20 times a day. It's unbelievable.
I don't get any robocalls
that way, man. I just paid a service to remove me. I got NordVPN and I paid for them to start removing me at the extra $4 a month for them. And now it's like gone down a lot. So it's been amazing getting less calls, but I get text messages, I get phone calls, I get voicemails, I get emails. I get hit with ads all the time. And every platform I'm in, LinkedIn to TikTok, I get ads like hitting me all the time to buy a service, check out their voice agent, check out this. Like, it's unbelievable. My LinkedIn messages, it's unbelievable, man. Like 80 people messaging me about selling me something. Yeah, every day. Every day.
All right, so, you know, I love this. Like, we're talking about, like, the good things about AI, the bad things about AI, sort of the negative consequences to your personal life, what functions are getting replaced. I mean, where does this end? Where does this eventually end?
That's a really good question.
Like, it feels like, you know, for example, I started with this AI interview problem, and I was telling a friend, he's like, well, unfortunately, the only answer is AI interviewers. Like,
yeah, that's what I said. I said the counteraction is that you have to then use AI to counteract the AI applicants.
Yeah, that's right. I thought you meant AI detection. What he was saying is like just have an AI like that takes the interview, make them show up for an interview to an AI, and then just screen and you know you can like
your AIs are just like interviewing and doing each other.
Like it's like at some point they're gonna send an AI
candidate. Yeah,
it's like I've got two fucking AIs talking to each other. It just feels like constant escalation. The only
I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to answer that question. All I do know is that there is a risk to all of it. And it's honestly one of the reasons why I like being where I'm at. And I don't want to move back to California is because, like, I'm not saying this is going to happen. And I don't want you to coin me as a doomsday prepper. But I'm, like, almost off the grid. So next year, one of my last purchases will be a solar panel with the power bank. And essentially, I'm propane, septic, solar. We have a massive garden now that produces a ton of vegetables and fruits. I'm trying to convince my wife to get chickens, and like we could literally just like shut down, just like, see you guys, well, you could come over, you could hang out with me. But I'm not saying it's gonna happen, but I'm just saying like we're very, very close to being fully off.
I'm not like super worried about the doomsday scenario.
I need guns if I was gonna do the full doomsday, but yeah.
I think Amy would be down.
Amy would be down. No, she wouldn't. No, but I think our cul-de-sac would be down. I mean, all the guys in the cul-de-sac we're all like secretly like, haha, funny, funny. But seriously, if it did happen, we know what we're doing, right? We're like, totally, totally know what we're doing. We're barricading the top of the cul-de-sac with some of our trucks. And we already know which houses have guns, which houses have solar, which houses have chickens, which houses have gardens. Like, it's so funny, dude. All the guys in the cul-de-sac are like half joking about it, but we're so ready. Yeah.
Chris, are you getting out of here?
Yeah.
All right. Where are you going? Let me know. All right.
Yeah, I'll get you on your way too, man. This was really great. I love this conversation about AI, but it's funny that you don't get this bombardment. I mean, that's probably why your point of views are so different. I'm literally getting hammered. It's so bad, dude. It's so bad, dude. It's just like everybody and their mom is selling me something.
That's so interesting. I mean, I see some of these reports about how Fortune 500s are using AI and you know what the ROI on it is and you know whether it's even there and all that kind of stuff. And then I do see ads for like small business owners where they're like, why don't you have 100 AI agents doing your job for you, right?
Yeah.
And the feeling I get is that everybody's talking about using AI to wildly increase the efficiency of their business, but I have yet to meet one person who has actually done this. And I know a lot of people.
Yeah, there's a guy that runs, I'll send you the link. He spoke at the last Operators Guild conference. He has like a list of fastest growing AI companies. Like, I think it's like super.com or something like that. I can't remember. I'll find you the link and I'll get it to you. But it's pretty fascinating because there's a growing list of companies that are getting to unicorn status with less than 10 people. And he like tracks them. I mean, and so they're obviously using AI. There's like no way you could like generate that much without some sort of like AI automation and heavy usage of agents, right? Because there's just in my opinion, there's just way too much work. So I think that there are people making it work. It's just not as common.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it's nobody, but I am saying like there are more people that have won a lottery in the last 10 years than the number of people who are effectively using AI to generate. Right? So it's like, in that way, gambling has generated more millionaires.
Yeah.
Today.
That's so funny. Well,
it's like, is that the metric we want? Because, 5 years ago, it was blockchain or whatever and all that stuff. And it's like, now it's like, I'm not believe that AI will generate very real productivity returns for small businesses and the economy at large over time.
Yeah.
I believe that it'll be, my view is that it'll be incremental, like 2% here, 3% there, 4% here, and it'll add up to a lot of value for the economy and for owners. And I think people would be repurposed slowly, not in the way that like, I think some things like customer service departments, those headcounts will go down by 50%. If you employ 100 customer service reps or 100 call center reps, that number will be 50 in a year and a half.
You want to make a bet?
You're just throwing away shareholder value.
Let's make a bet.
I already know. I have friends who have done this.
Yeah.
Who have fired 30% of their customer support staff. Now, let's say you've got 100 customer support reps. You've also got 1,000 headcount everywhere else. So the fact that you fired 40 support reps isn't
meaningful.
Significantly cutting down your total labor. But that function, it's not that an AI can do it all. It's that an AI can do the boring parts so that the remaining reps have much higher leverage. And you might have 2-1, 3-1, 5-1 leverage. And so these departments are seeing outsized gains.
Right.
But, all these ads where you're like, single small business owner, 5,000 robots. I've yet to see that actually materialize for anyone.
I know, and I will say that I'm also in the same boat, and I feel really bad when people keep selling me their agents for my small business, and I kind of don't want to do it, and I don't really explain why not, but it's just because I'm honestly way too busy to double check it, and it works. What I have works, and I'm just not into it, which I feel really bad about because I'm actually supposed to be very tech forward and savvy, but I haven't done it, and the reason why I haven't done it, not from people not trying to sell it to me or my friends trying to sell it to me, it's just because I just don't care. I already know how to make money and it's making me money and I just want to go make money. And you're asking me to unwind a huge portion of my business when I already know how to make money. It's not like you're not fixing my business to make money. You're making me go out of my way to risk something to possibly help me make a little bit more money. Where I'm like, why? I don't think you understand my priorities here. My priorities here isn't to do you know what I'm saying? It's just a really backwards thinking and what's it called? We're going to save you. We're going to rescue you. We're going to do this. I'm like, I don't need rescuing. I have a very clear line of sight. It's a very boring business. I'm not equating this with some sort of magical business. It's a very boring business and we're already making money. We can't even keep up with the demand. Do you know anybody that has a good service provider for anything right now? There's no service workers. Trust me, we don't have any issues. We're making money. We just have to shut our mouth, keep our nose clean and just focus. We just have to work and we're going to make money over time. Right. There's no service workers. So stop trying to sell me these things that's why I haven't done it. And I feel really bad because I'm if I feel this way as a tech guy from the venture space, can you imagine how the vast majority of small business owners feel? They're just eye roll, eye roll, eye roll. It's like, dude, just let me work. You know what I mean? My phone can't stop ringing and I'm happy the way things are,
Yeah, right now everybody telling me, have you heard about this AI service that blah, 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 feels a lot like you know, Dutch tulips, buy Bitcoins. Like, it doesn't, like,
my... Wait a minute. Bitcoin's legit, bro. Come on, don't go...
My benchmark is not, have you heard about it? But if somebody I know says, I've been using this for 3 months and it's made me X amount of dollars, like something meaningful, mm-hmm. then I'm like, okay, now I'm interested in talking about it. But mostly I'm hearing all this stuff secondhand, or I saw this thing on Twitter where somebody said blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, well, like, if it's a real thing, it'll come around.
Like, totally. Yeah, there's like the swell of adoption, right? There's the pack leaders, there's the early adopters, and then there's the mainstream, right? So, yeah, you can just wait for it to be mainstream. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. You just won't get all the upside that comes with it. But you also won't get the downside from doing it either, though. So, yeah. It's like pros and cons. But for me, I will say that I'm diversified in the fact that, like, worst case scenario, doomsday happens. I feel like I'm very close to being off the grid, so I'm pretty happy about that. And then best case scenario, I feel also, like I'm...
Consult with these people. So AI wins, you do well. AI destroys the world, you do well. You have a very nicely hedged portfolio.
That's kind of what I'm thinking about. How do I hedge for these things, you know? And so that's kind of my mindset on it right now. It's just I'm not smart enough to figure out what's going to happen, the impacts are, but... All I know that all I can do is not worry about it. No, don't let it cripple me, and focus on what I can control, and test things as much as I can, so I don't miss the boat either. Right. So, a little bit of everything. And I think the biggest thing for me is just figuring out how to, like, introduce this to my kids. And so, I will say I have been intentionally conversing with ChatGPT, the voice agent version, in front of them, so they're watching me prompter. Right? Like, so they can kind of hear it and see it. And I've just started doing this. Okay. So in front of them, I'll say, like, hey, I need you to be a really good expert in, you know, like, vacation planning. I have asked me questions one by one until you have a comprehensive understanding of who I am before you start to help me solve this problem. Here's the problem. And then they're literally watching me have this full on conversation for like 20 minutes with this robot. And they're just like, she's weird. That's like their response. Why does she talk like that? And I'm like, but I, like, you know, I'm showing them a little by little this month. And I started doing
it. Okay, that's interesting. Do you have, how would you say your perspective on screen time with your girls has changed over, like, the last, I don't know, call it 5 years?
I don't really pay much attention to it because I could give them screen time the entire time I'm with them. And Amy gives them so little, it's still not enough. Does that make sense? Like, yeah, like...
That means to me that you think there's a certain amount they should get.
Totally. It's the same problem as, like, when Amy used to be so hardcore about, like, just their diet and all this stuff, which is good, right? Because I think natural foods and all these things are really great, and we're finding out microplastics is bad after, like, decades of putting microplastics in our face wash and everything, you know what I mean? Like, we're, like, learning about all these bad things in our consumables and products. But I also think there's a certain amount of normalcy that happens. When I went to In-N-Out with Lily, and Grace went to Cava with Amy, and I'm like, yeah, get a lemonade, get two fries, I don't care, like, let's do it, let's go ham. And Lily's like, no, I'm gonna get a lemonade, but I'm only gonna fill it up halfway because I don't want to feel bad afterwards. And I'm like, who the hell is this girl? My wife has her so well trained, and I'm literally just like, she's not even here, dude. Order the freaking lemonade and, like, let's go nuts, let's get two burgers and four fries and animal style it, let's go. And she's like already thinking about the consequences of her diet, which is cool. So because Amy's so conscious about digital exposure and things like that, like, I'm not worried about it at all. Like, I let them look at my phone. I let them play games on it. I let them have iPad time, and they ask for it, but they don't incessantly ask for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's really nice.
Healthy, balanced relationship with it.
Amy's really good about it. So she's really good at balance. Like, she's very balanced about everything, and she's really open. If they ever get too bored or they really start pestering about getting iPad time, she'll make them do, like, outside activities. Like, go grab, like, 50 weeds out of the, you know, yard, and then you can have, like, 30 minutes. You know what I mean? And then they'll go outside and run around, and they'll forget because they're having fun and they're kicking a ball around. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, she's like, she'll always make them go outside, you know, as like a reward system. Yeah.
So the obvious corollary is, or the next question is, how do you think about your kids' relationship with AI? Or, like, how do you want to encourage them, or, you know, have them stay away from it, and that kind of stuff?
I think that we need to expose them. So I've been exposing them to it. And like I said, I've been doing it through the voice agent with ChatGPT and just like letting them see how I converse with her and like, or it, I should say, because I have it set as a female voice, but I don't know if my wife has it set as a male voice or not. I don't really know. But yeah, so they're watching me talk to her, right? And they're listening in on how I talk to her and stuff. But
do they also talk to ChatGPT or something like that?
No, not yet. And they do talk to Siri and Google though. Okay. So they'll ask me questions, and sometimes I'll say, why don't you ask Google? And like, I'll prompt them and they'll run over to the Google Home and they'll say, hey, how fast does a cheetah run? You know what I mean? Like they'll ask like questions like that instead of asking me. And so I am letting them know they have access to resources and questions and answers like that. And I'm slowly starting to break them into it. But Amy's like, I'm not worried about it because she's so anti-technology. And she's not anti-technology, but she's like, let's go grab a dictionary. Let's go grab a, you know, encyclopedia. Let's go to the library and find. And she's so opposite that like, and she's predominantly with the kids that even if I use my 10% to completely jack them up on video games and AI and technology, it still wouldn't mess them up because they're so lopsided. Yeah.
Does Amy use AI?
Very rarely. Very rarely. And she'll do it mostly for like things that she's very like, she applied to be a substitute teacher recently. And so she did use it for that. She's like, hey, I'm just going to have it edited. That's a good idea, right? I'm like, yeah, totally. So then I'm helping your teacher how to prompt it, right? So because it'll be very generic unless you like give it some frameworks. And so helping her prompt it to be like, hey, I'm such and such. This is who I am. And I need you to really evoke this kind of informality, but yet professional. Like you literally need to tell it these things. And so I kind of coached her on those things. But she's used it maybe a dozen times.
Okay. So I don't know where this whole AI thing's going. I will say that I feel generally that whatever the flavor of the moment is, people tend to overhype it.
Yeah.
20 years ago, when I was graduating from college, people were like, everybody's going to be a coder. Everybody's going to be a coder.
Mm.
And I think today, nobody thinks that anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And so I think today people are like, everybody's going to be a prompt engineer.
Yeah.
Like that. I'm like, that'll really be true. Or like, I see people use Google today and they're like, they go to like, they type www.google.com, they go to it, they click into the box and they go, dear Google, my name is Eric. Where is the nearest gas station? Like, or something like that, right? And it's like the way they use Google, I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. There are still people who do that.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
15 years. Look, AI is going to be built into everything.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I think that people are still going to be basically the same.
I'm hopeful for your future, man. I think that your future is probably the better future. And it isn't as disruptive and pervasive as everyone thinks it'll be. I also hope that a lot too, man. I hope it's just another technology fad and we ride it and we just grow and acclimate to it, but things don't necessarily change too much. But I do have a weird feeling that this one's a little bit different than the internet and or the computer.
What's a good 5-year bet for us here?
Oh gosh. Oh gosh. You really like your steak dinners. I think in 5 years, we'll see a massive shift in job types. I'd say in 5 years, we should see a massive shift. Like I'm thinking like 30% of jobs will be moved into different areas. What do you think? Why don't you make the bet this time? Yeah. So that I can bet against you and then enjoy a nice steak dinner.
I would love to buy you a steak dinner.
Yeah, let's do it.
What do I think? Like what's and it's gotta be like a, you know, a claim that is, you know, non-obvious or that we fall on opposite sides of.
Yeah. Make it about the kids, dude. Like, make a claim about what you think the kids' education or something will be like or their life will be like.
Have you heard about this Alpha School?
Yes. I freaking love it. Oh my gosh. I love the concept of it. I love it.
Invest like the best or invest like the rest of us, whatever it's called, whatever that podcast is called, where they interview Joe. He says something really interesting, which is two things. One, he says, all content that has been created to date for education is now obsolete. And
amazing statement. Okay.
It's fascinating, right? Because he's like, yeah. This is not tailored to a person.
Yeah.
And the way he describes it, you can take any individual, map their interest graph.
Yeah.
Map the requirements for education, what skills you're supposed to know, and then take that and create perfect customized curriculums to get to the desired outcomes, to keep you in the learning zone. And so that means that everything you read can be, like, you like Pokemon cards? We can make and you don't let, you know, your multiplication tables, we can create customized word problems about Pokemon.
Yeah.
That ask the questions that you are bad at in math.
Yeah.
And you'll get good at it. And so yeah. all the times table, like, you know, the fill it out or whatever, those are
totally.
All, and I'm like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Or he gives an example of, like, you know, talking about, like, post-World War One, like, all the countries fighting or whatever, or, like, the relationships. And they sort of, like, remap it against Taylor Swift and her frenemies or something like that. To be yeah. like, oh, yeah, well, this country was that and blah, blah, blah. And so yeah. if you can map to people's interests, then that's new content, and that can be generated on the fly. Yeah, there's a reliable, or there's a valid claim that all historically produced content is now obsolete.
Dude, that's crazy. Yeah, I love that statement. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
The second thing he says, and this is the bet, which I think he's gonna be wrong on. He says, like, sometimes in the next 10 years, there will be a handheld iPad-like device that, for less than $1,000, will do all of this. And every kid in the world will be able to take that device and learn twice as fast, four times as fast, as any curriculum that exists today. That is an outrageous claim. I don't think it's true that device will exist, but I do think it's true that, I think it's probably true, or at least, you know, a believable claim that this method of education will far outperform any other one.
Totally. So, totally.
I want to send my kids to an alpha school.
I do too. I mean, I gotta talk my wife into it because she's very, I think you're absolutely right. And I would love to as well too. I would love to send them to the school. I do think that AI has a really, really big part in our future education, and not just kids. I actually think that it has the ability to teach all of us, like, oh, in a way that's going to make us learn way faster and just way more intuitively. Because, like you just said, the inference and the reference is that it can pull from our interest, our skills, and our institution, our current knowledge base. Like, it'll know all those things and adapt a curriculum that basically knows when to push and pull way more reactively and adaptively.
Yeah, the three things it needs to know are what you need to know, what you already know, so that yeah. creates, like, the content,
yeah.
and then what you're interested in, so it maps the like, quiz material and content that you're learning to the stuff you already care about.
Yeah, I actually think another good tool, maybe I can convince someone to help me build this, but it's like an AI tutor or teacher, you know, it's like a Khan Academy, like stuff, but it's, like, really around this concept of, like, you have to teach me this skill or this end result, but you can't tell me what the end result is. You can only do it through coaching, mentorship, and questions. And so you have to, like, go through this channel, right? It's like this, like, learning of the hard skill, the technical skill, whatever that may be, right? Through, like, the Socratic method, essentially, right? And then you toggle the button, and then you say, okay, now teach me how to do this with full AI mode. Like, literally show me how to prompt this so the best question comes out and teaches me the fastest and the best output comes out using AI, you know? And then the third mode is like, hey, like, let me do this on my own. Just give me some guidance on what resources I can read or whatever, what sequence I should follow to have, like, a normal expedited, like, classroom style thing where I have to ingest, like, show, tell, do, read, write, explain, like, that kind of concept, right? So it's like these three modes that you toggle, and then you, like, basically sell it to kids to basically learn new skills or learn curriculum. So you have to learn. So it's like you can't get the answer from it. So you have to learn the technical skills and the hard skills. You have a version that teaches you how to use AI to create a super output, like a crazy output. And then you have a version that basically teaches you how to do it in an expedited manner, like alpha school, where it's like, here's the resources, go do it and actually try to understand it and then try to do it yourself and then try to explain it to somebody else, right? I think that's a dope ass business.
I love it. Yeah.
Should we start it?
After you're at 20.
Okay.
And we'll do it.
That's a good idea, dude.
It's a freaking great idea.
Yeah.
It's an awesome
And it'd
idea.
Be fun to work with the kids and, you know, and be like, you know, my kids will be the customers. It'll be awesome. I love it.
I would love, this is like a future version of the world. I would love to work with my kids. People have family businesses and stuff like that where, like, the kid goes into the family business. I would love that opportunity.
That's awesome, man. I just interviewed someone, Paul Hood. He's growing his accounting bookkeeping business. He's like 20 million ARR. He's going to get to 100.
Oh, that's about to go to zero.
No, he's going to grow it. I mean, he's going to grow it to 100. And I'm sure he's already automating a ton of his shit too, you know. But he was talking about how he's growing it and all three sons work in the business. And it's so funny because that's something that, like, I didn't enjoy because my dad, you know, like, my family, my parents, they all work together. Oh, not my parents, sorry. My dad works with my mom's brothers, and so there's like a family business, and I didn't like it because of all the negative things that I saw around it and kind of the mixture of like relationships with money and things like that. And so I've kind of always avoided it because I grew up in it, right? And then and now that I'm like, I don't know, now I can't think of anything better. Like, I am the same way, man. I've worked with Andy Cunningham and her daughter, and now I'm like seeing Paul Hood with his sons. Like, it's just like, I don't know, man, Bloomin' Blinds with like the family business. It's like, dude, it's like the dream. And I can't wait to work with Lily and Grace, and I hope they work with me in the business. Yeah. I'm the exact same way, man. That'd be super awesome.
This is like out of left field. Does anything happen to real estate with AI?
Yeah, it has to. I mean, there's already so much democratization of like even like the agents, you know, like their jobs are getting upended just because of the access to the data, and the work is getting like much more democratized. And so you're seeing like lawsuits happen with people that are like charging their agent fees and broker rates. I mean, obviously it's a small dip in the larger scheme of things of where it's headed, but you add AI to it, I'm assuming it's only going to get more and more prolific, and transactions can happen a lot more, not democratically, but more asynchronously and digitally, because it'll be based on a lot of the data that's out in the market, and transactions can happen a lot more transparently. So I think yes. I mean, I think absolutely yes. But you're not in real estate. Why do you care?
I was just thinking about like asset classes that like maybe don't change at all, because like people will always have to buy land and homes. But then I was like, well, maybe it does change, because maybe self-driving and like real AI driving makes it so that like, you know,
I think everything's going to change. I think everything's going to change a little bit. I mean, there's no way that it's not going to change everything, like the telephone or the internet did. I think everything's going to get a little bit changed. Even if you'd insulate yourself from it, there's going to be people that you work around or have to, I don't know. I just feel like there's going to be some amount of change from it, but that's just me. And then when people are like pool cleaning, I mean, I think pool cleaning will get disrupted by AI eventually too, because eventually we'll have robots doing this stuff. Yeah. Maybe it's in 5 years, maybe it's in 10 years, but there'll be better and better robots that are created that'll, you know, become cheaper and cheaper, and the cost of labor keeps going up, and robots will do it, and it's freaking hot, and it's acid, and like bad chemicals and fumes. It's like, it's a dirty job. You know what I mean? Like, eventually there's going to come a point.
This like, I mean, I'm envisioning now this crazy future where robots are doing all this like manual labor.
Yeah.
Do you think we see this in our lifetimes?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm already preparing for it. I'm already like calculating that I'm going to make like cash flow for like 8 years, 10 years on the pool cleaning before we have to start like disrupting it with robots. There's no way. Like, the labor rate is, there's just not enough people. So they say, what is that? That's scientifically proven, you need to have a 2.2 regeneration rate for you to have a successful, viable economy and a growing state for a country. We are well below 2.2 in America. So where's that labor coming from? Where's the resources that are going to come from it? In addition to that, we have a monstrous balloon of population that are dying. Like, our silverhead generation is bigger population than the next generation. It's bigger than the next generation. So you have less people servicing this large... It's the whole thing's going to need robots. Like, there's just no... I mean, in my mind, there's no mathematical way that we don't need robots. That's my perception. That's my opinion. And my that's what I think is going to happen. Just from the math. I'm not even thinking about it from like an opinion standpoint, or like, oh, hypothetical. Like, I just look at it from the data. Like, dude, like these people that are, if I was 70 years old and I was losing health and wealth, I mean, and I'm sitting on the largest asset of any generation in the country, I'm not going to spend it on passing it to my kid. I'm going to spend it on my health. I'm living longer than my parents were. I'm putting myself at the 70 to 90 year old range, right? I'm like living to 100 now, and I'm like uncomfortable, and I have money. Yeah, I'm not going to pass on my house and my equity to my kids. I'm going to spend it on $90,000 to $100,000, whatever, a year to basically like live more comfortably in my last age. And then guess what these kids are going to do? These kids aren't going to work freaking making 30 to 50K a year flipping burgers or cleaning pools. They're going to go make $80,000 a year helping old people. Like, it's just obvious. So then where are the people that are going to flip burgers and do these things? We have to get robots to do them. That's my thought.
I think you're right.
I mean, people are incentivized by money and what's good for them. And I just can't imagine. I mean, if I was 90 and I had, you know, a couple $1 million locked up in real estate that, you know, that I would do the exact same thing. I would try to be comfortable.
Yeah. I don't know what that future is going to look like, and I'm nervous.
Yeah, we'll find out.
When that day comes, you have guns and solar, so I'll be...
Yeah, exactly. And we'll make another bet, so there'll be another steak dinner. So it's just constantly eating steak. That's basically what my relationship is, just making these dumb bets and just eating steak together. Eric, thank you so much for doing this, man. I really appreciate it. Let's wrap it up, and we'll talk soon, okay?